Hot days and cool water go together, but a little caution goes a long way in choosing a place to swim, especially if it's someplace other than the community pool. What you don't know can potentially hurt you in one swimming hole or another, so it's good to know that you can check for health advisories in some swimming places electronically. Your smartphone can't test the water, yet anyway, but it can connect you to something called the Swim Guide, so you can see the latest information on selected swimming sites. The Riverkeeper and Baykeeper programs that dot the country are responsible. Forrest English is the Rogue Riverkeeper and our guest here on the Jefferson Exchange. Forrest, welcome back to the Exchange.
Thanks very much. Good morning.
So remind people what the Riverkeeper program does.
Rogue Riverkeeper is an advocate for clean water and salmon populations throughout the Rogue Basin.
And are there similar programs generally around the country now?
Yeah, and around the world, in fact. You know, there's over 200 waterkeepers now spread throughout the globe, growing quickly in Latin America. You know, I think about 140 of those are within the United States right now.
And how big an area do most of the waterkeepers keep an eye on? Are they generally confined to certain watersheds or
they're all watershed-based systems? Yeah, mm-hmm. So we're all, you know, local advocates that, you know, live and work within our regions. You know, ours obviously is the Rogue Basin, which stretches from, you know, Ashland up to Shady Cove and out to Gold Beach, about 3.3 million acres of rivers and streams, and includes the Applegate and Illinois and the Rogue, obviously.
It's a lot of river keeping.
It's a lot of rivers.
And so how many people are involved in the program in addition to you?
There's just two of us right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So you're on the road a lot.
We do a little bit of traveling, yeah.
Well, what are the kinds of things you do on a given day?
Well, I mean, obviously our water quality sampling programs, but, you know, we work on legislative issues as well as kind of oversight of the Clean Water Act throughout our region.
All right. So tell us about the Swim Guide and its genesis and how it first came to be.
Well, the Swim Guide is a way to check if the water at the swimming hole you're looking to go into is clean right now. It was started by Lake Ontario Waterkeeper a while back because they wanted to answer the question of, can you swim in Lake Ontario? Which seems reasonable enough and I think is a little more complex than if we can swim here. And so they not only built, you know, the sampling program, but also an application for people to be able to check on any given day. And so not only does it give you quality of the water that you're looking at going into, it also gives you directions and, you know, might help you find new places that you want to go swim.
And so how is the information compiled?
Well, it depends on who's collecting it, but we sample once a week. So we go out and take, you know, we're focusing primarily on fecal bacteria here, but we certainly have the option to use Oregon Health Authority advisories for algae at Lost Creek Lake, for example, and we'll use those as well. But we do weekly samples for E. coli bacteria, which is a fecal bacteria, and we just cruise around once a week and get those, and we've got about a 24-hour turnaround time at the equipment back in our lab. So we'll have the results the next day.
Just so people don't get too far into the gag fact, I mean, is there generally a baseline level of E. coli in any body of water?
It usually increases the further down in the watershed you go. You know, so at the very top of the watershed, you know, the Ashland Creeks, the, you know, upper Rogue River, there's not usually a whole lot in there. And usually it increases as you go downstream, you know, as there's more, you know, chances for animals to get in the water and, you know, there's more flood irrigation and things like that that really do wash that bacteria into the streams.
All right. So E. coli is the big one you're looking for. And then how do people access the Swim Guide?
The Swim Guide is at theswimguide.org, but you can also find the app. So there's a website that you can view the maps on, and there's also an app for both Android and iPhone. And you can find all of those things at the Rogue Riverkeeper website as well.
Obviously, there's more than just Android and iPhone. There's also a Windows phone and some other variations as well. Do you have that, the apps work for those as well?
I don't think that those are finished yet. I think Lake Ontario Waterkeeper might be working on those, but if they are, they're not done yet.
All right. So it still goes back to the original guys, the Lake Ontario Waterkeeper folks, to do some of the real heavy duty computer work on this.
Yeah, I mean, basically they set us up with an account, and you know, I go in and update things after our sampling runs. You know, so we've got, I think, 2,500 and growing sites that are monitored throughout North America right now. There's actually a whole big expansion right now in Baja, and obviously it started in Canada, and then, you know, a bunch of spots throughout the United States from Puget Sound down to Florida.
Forrest English is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the Rogue River Keeper. We're talking about the swim guide at theswimguide.org. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange and ask your questions, make your comments. Maybe there's some swimming holes you'd like to suggest as places to be checked on a regular basis by the swim guide. Join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782 by email jx@jeffnet.org. If you choose to get the smartphone app, does it make any requests of information? I noticed that with some apps that you punch the button and say install, and it says, can I have access to this, that, or the other thing in your phone?
You can give it access to your location. It'll help you find, you know, exactly how far away that next swimming hole is when it's really hot.
Okay, good to know. So it's nearby anyway.
Yep.
And so it's not, I mean, how you have to limit the number of places you can do the sampling and get numbers back for, I'm sure. So, I mean, about how many different swimming places are you covering through the Rogue Riverkeeper program?
We monitor six spots throughout the valley right now, and we're also using data from the city of Ashland on Ashland Creek as well. So, you know, this is kind of a cooperative program. We're using equipment to do our analysis from the Department of Environmental Quality and from the Rogue Valley Council of Governments, and we're getting data weekly from the city of Ashland to do that work. So in total right now, we're at eight spots, you know, and that includes Immigrant Lake, Lost Creek Lake, Kentrell Buckland, the Applegate, a couple of spots on the main stem of the Rogue, Gold Hill and Grants Pass, and the Illinois River out in near Selma.
Is it fair to extrapolate? I mean, if you're maybe, you know, 6 miles downstream from the place that has the most recent monitoring, is it likely to be pretty effective where you are? Or are there other factors people should take into account?
There's certainly other factors. I think, you know, if you were at Tuvel, for example, and you wanted to look at our monitoring at Gold Hill, it's probably pretty close, especially if it's good. Usually moving upstream, you know, the quality gets higher, not lower.
Okay. Upstream better. Got it. So you said the samples are taken weekly?
Yeah.
So what are you seeing so far this year, Forrest?
It's actually pretty good. We were a little surprised by that because early on, Rogue Valley Council of Governments had done some monitoring earlier this year and found, you know, Jackson Creek and a number of other tributaries had very high bacteria levels. And with the drought in particular this year, you know, that'll see less water, which means the same amount of pollution actually is more concentrated. And so I've been pleasantly surprised that it's fairly clean so far.
Yeah, we had the RVCOG folks in here recently to talk about the contamination issues, and I guess you were working on the same assumption I would have started from, which is, gee, that probably means there are going to be some issues with the monitoring samples you brought in.
Right. Well, and we've still got another 3 months left of monitoring that we're planning on doing this year, so I hope that it will remain the way it is, but it certainly has an opportunity to change. You know, I think the difference between RVCOG's program and our program is RVCOG is monitoring streams that are not necessarily used currently for folks to get in and wade and swim and go boating and fishing. So we're focusing on the areas where people go to do that right now. You know, they're, I think, focusing on a lot of other tributaries, which are important and we're concerned about, and I'm really glad they're getting that data. But it's not necessarily where people are recreating.
Understood, especially with Bear Creek, which has been close to water contact activities for a very long time.
Right. There's places like Little Butte Creek that have permanent metal signs attached that say, you know, don't go in the water. It's not safe, right, unfortunately.
Let's take a call. We have Paul in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the swim guide with Forrest English, the Rogue River Keeper.
Good morning. I think the River Keeper program is a super program. I was wondering what the source of the pollution is. I've swum in these waters since I was a kid and never had an issue until I went to Portland and had to dive the bottom of my boat to keep it clean for free-dive the boat to keep it clean for racing, and I'd feel bad the next day. But there I was dealing with you know, the agricultural runoff, Hanford, 87 dams on the river, etc., etc., etc. What's causing the problem down here? Is it mostly ag runoff, industrial runoff, surface runoff? What's going on?
All right, good question. Thanks for that, Paul.
Well, I think, good question, Paul, and I think I would first say I'm glad that we're not up in Portland. We're certainly blessed with cleaner water down here. I think the bulk of the sites, when we've been doing bacteria studies in the past, I think the bulk of the pollution has been coming from ag runoff, and there's certainly an opportunity for that to come, especially during rain, from municipal storm drain systems and things like that. Of course, there's always contributions from raccoons and deer and geese and the like. But
contributions.
We haven't found that that's the main driver so far.
A lot of this is so-called non-point source pollution. Is that right? You can't really say, well, it came from this place right here.
Well, usually it actually does come from a ditch. So it is very much looks like a point source, but, you know, it's not regulated. So that's true.
So back to the swim guide itself then. I mean, if people are thinking, well, wait a minute, I can't read, you know, parts per million or whatever the reading of E. coli would be. So what is actually represented in the swim guide? What are they going to see when they put this stuff up on their screens?
Swim guide's very simple. It's either red or it's green. That's not true. It could be gray. Gray would mean that there's no data. Green means it's good, and red means maybe not. You know, we are using the same standards that the state does to assess water quality, you know, which we could talk about in terms of MPN per 100 milliliters, but there's no real need to get into that. but I think suffice to say we're using the same systems that the state does, and our data is going through that same process and is being provided to them in the long term. So not only are we collecting data that's going to be useful for public health reasons right now, but it's going to be provided to help managers make decisions about our water quality in the future.
But no warning then? There's no yellow level to say things are on the borderline?
I think there's a yellow option if there's no recent data, but the long-term data has showed that it's generally unsafe. We certainly don't have any of those sites locally.
All right, we have a question from Boyd in Wolf Creek who writes in, the water has stopped running over the top of the dam in Wolf Creek County Park swimming hole. Would you consider including us?
Absolutely. I would say send me an email, and I would be happy to talk about adding that site.
Okay. What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Forrest, F-O-R-R-E-S-T, at rogueriverkeeper.org. And our phone number and other emails are also on our website, of course.
All right. We'll make sure we have plenty of options for people to make the contact on our website. You can join us here in the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the swim guide, which is put out by the various waterkeeper programs, including the Rogue River Keeper. Forrest English functions in that role. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So there must be a limit. I mean, if you're considering doing something like Wolf Creek County Park, I mean, you probably have a little more room here. But given how busy you and the other person in the Riverkeeper program probably are, you can't add a whole lot more places, I'm thinking.
Well, we have a great water quality intern right now who's doing a lot of that work. And we certainly have the ability to add more sites as long as we've got volunteers who are wanting to grab those samples and, you know, pass them off to us. The actual lab work is really simple and doesn't take a whole lot of time. Really, it's just the time collecting. So if there are folks that are really excited to get their spot sampled, we'd love to help you out.
And how quickly does the information get uploaded to the web?
24 hours. So from the time we collect the sample, get it back to the lab, takes 24 hours. You know, just citing something on the website is just, you know, a quick click.
And then once a week it's updated?
Yep.
So how different can a situation be from one week to the next, particularly if you get events like major run? I mean, if there are storms that actually bring some rain, cause some runoff, stuff like that. I mean, what? How different could the water conditions be from week to week?
Pretty different. If we do get a rainstorm, that's going to change things very dramatically. And that usually washes through within about 24 hours. But also, as we see flows decline this summer, as we're expecting them to, that's going to change things in a very steady fashion, probably not as suddenly. So it should be generally pretty steady, but there is a few instances, particularly rainstorms, like you said, that could have a very sharp change.
All right. You mentioned two locations in Lithia Park and Ashland, which makes Ashland very well covered, obviously.
Very well covered.
But this is information that comes from the city of Ashland, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. The city of Ashland has a weekly monitoring program as well they've had for a number of years.
So what are the thresholds for changing from green to red or red to green? I mean, what are the places at which you say, okay, this is no longer a good thing?
Well, the state standard is a 406 MPN per 100 milliliters, which basically is a measurement of how many colonies of E. coli fecal bacteria are in a certain measurement of water.
There we go with the MPN. Okay.
Right. So really, we're taking the same standards and we're just breaking it down into a method that's easy for folks to understand.
All right, so the standards are the same from place to place. So what's green here wouldn't be red at a place elsewhere in the country,
nope.
Et cetera. Nothing like that. Okay.
Standards do vary a little bit from state to state, but they all have to at least equal some of the EPA standards. So, you know, that is helpful.
At any point, are you considering adding other things that you'll be testing for other than E. coli?
Yeah. Another thing that we're interested in doing, and this may not be for the swim guide exactly, is mercury testing in fish tissues. You've probably seen that there's been a number of mercury advisories lately. Immigrant Lake, Applegate Lake, and the Rugger itself all have mercury advisories for certain resident fish. So that's something that we're certainly considering and working with fishermen to do tests on those fish.
All right. You did mention some flatwater swimming places, Lost Creek Lake. This is stuff that comes in through sources other than Rogue River Keeper?
Lost Creek Lake, we go and grab as well.
You do? Okay,
yep.
That is your stuff. Now, you are looking for algae there as well, because that's been the major issue with Lost Creek Lake.
Yeah, so we're also checking for algae while we're there, and we're also getting the advisories from Oregon Health Authority. And so as soon as we get any of those advisories, like we did in early June, that site will be specially listed as closed.
All right, you mentioned that some places can be gray. I see some Oregon coastal beaches are gray. Does that have anything to do with the Riverkeeper program? Is it all Oregon Beach Monitoring Program?
That's the Oregon Beach Monitoring Program. And I think the ones that are gray right now are just not part of Oregon's 2014 monitoring program.
But could be at some point in the future?
Right.
Okay. We are talking about the Swim Guide. You can find it at theswimguide.org, a chance to look on your smartphone or other computing device for information about swimming holes in your area. Forrest English is the Rogue Riverkeeper, one of the participating organizations. Forrest, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.